Hello and welcome to iVow.
I'm Jenny Prisk and I'm your host for this podcast and absolutely delighted to be sitting across from Jenny Doherty of the Daraja Academy for Girls in Kenya. Jenny, welcome to our program.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on.
It's just terrific to have you here. I have to tell our listeners that you and I go back a number of years now, and we're both Jennies, but the most important thing we have in common is the Daraja Academy. So would you take us back to the beginning, to you and your husband, Jason, founding the Academy, and tell us that background, paint the picture for us.
Well, I can tell you the funny, silly story, which is all things are my husband's fault, all good, wonderful things. I sure love him. And one of the most important things outside of Daraja is my 10-month-old son that I have with him. But we started Daraja in 2009, but it really started over the conversation of the baby discussion in 2006. And we said, well, what do we want to do with our lives? How do we want to be of service to the world? And Jason said, I really want to start a school in East Africa. And so I think that was my moment in time where I realized that he was really serious about it.
Uh-huh.
He had been talking about it for, we'd been together 5 years at that point. We, you know, really had been brainstorming and playing around with this idea, but I didn't realize he was so serious until we started talking about the next phase of our life. And so in 2006, it was my first time leaving the country, and I went to Kenya, and I saw the need for education firsthand. So Jason may have been the impetus to get me there, but once I got there, talk about having a testimony of the need for education, I met girls in a project in Kibera that were going to not be able to go on past eighth grade because they couldn't afford to pay the school fees. In Kenya, the secondary school, which is high school, is subsidized, but for families that can't even afford more than 1 meal a day, that's not even a possibility for them. So when I met some of these girls who I learned whose educations would not go on, I didn't feel like that was fair. And since that point, I've really dedicated my life to girls' education. And, you know, Daraja opened its first, you know, our set of doors, and our first class of girls were 26. There was 26 of them, and they came in, and they were our pioneer class, and we tested everything on them. And every year after that, we added in a new class until we had a 9 through 12 program, and we currently serve 114 students every year. So we couldn't be happier.
Oh, that's just such a wonderful story to hear that. Again, we're talking about the power and importance of education, especially for girls. And so can you increase those numbers above 114, or does that mean completely redefining your campus? And
it would require an incredible capital outlay. Mm-hmm. We are in the early discussions about how to triple our school size. Because our results are so good, we keep talking about that we can't afford not to grow. What we're doing with 114 girls is really something special. We've got 86% of our girls going on to higher education. We've got 80% of our girls continuing to stay active in community service when they leave our program. And they exit our program having the skills to be grassroots leaders of change. That's what we're attempting to do on our campus. Yes, we're giving them a 4-year education, but we're helping them to become agents for change in their communities. And we're watching them exit our program doing this. And when you talk about girls' education and the multiplier effect that happens with it, it's something truly fascinating. And I think that we can't afford to stay 114. We must grow. In order to do that, we have to build dormitories and classrooms and dining halls, and then we have to pay and operate the school. So step one for us is probably we're going to be designing a plan in 2016 and 2017, hopefully executing that within a couple years to grow our program.
It's wonderful momentum that you're gaining with the academy, and it's exciting to hear. But I can also hear the dollar signs behind your conversation and know that those have to be found and established. But how your two young American people with your beautiful little son, Thomas, living in the heart of Africa, how are you viewed by the locals?
You know, it's interesting. When I went to Kenya for the first time, I understood discrimination. I understood racism because I was suddenly seen for the quality of my skin and not who I was as a person. And I have a new understanding of that. In Kenya, usually when you're a white face, you're an mzungu is what they call you. Mm-hmm. And you have money. And sometimes people think you have the answers. And I think that is a real challenge that we face, and we're constantly working at this school. Yes, we bring in volunteers to our campus that have white faces. They come from Europe, they come from Australia, they come from the US. They have a wonderful way of bridging in, because I really believe, yes, we have this discrimination, but it takes all of us in the world together. And I think as our girls see that and understand that not every American has all the answers or has all the money, that's important for them to learn as well.
Mm-hmm. So that's a wonderful story in itself, just the way you're settling that, as you say, that racial discrimination. Let's get to the curriculum. This is for African girls going through an African free school. And is it still the first in?
You know, it's interesting. If it is a religious school, they often won't have to pay fees. And I think we've removed back. We're not the first because I can't guarantee that. But what I can guarantee you is that we provide an almost completely free education. We ask for a small amount from the parents to get their skin in the game, to help them be invested in their students' education. I think there's something to that. Mm-hmm. But other than that, we pay for everything. Scholarship, notebooks, textbooks, tuition, boarding. You know, we board 114 girls, mm-hmm. and we feed 114 girls plus staff members. Mm-hmm. So it's not a small endeavor.
And how did you establish the curriculum? You know, being American and working at an African girls' college, mm-hmm. how did you establish that curriculum, that it was the appropriate mm-hmm. curriculum for these girls?
You know, Kenya has a very rigorous curriculum, and it is great, but it is rigorous, and it is very much in a lecture in the front of the classroom, take notes and take an exam process. Mm-hmm. So what we do is we are in the game of, we're teaching in Kenya. It's appropriate to teach their curriculum. But what we do is we bring in some, what I call American style teaching, or maybe some progressive and innovative teaching methods can also, that's another way to put it. We do things like project-based learning. So we're trying to take this rigorous curriculum, and instead of making it so rote, that we make it practical and something that really can be applied to life.
Mm. And to their careers. And what sort of careers, now that you have graduates, mm-hmm. what sort of careers are you seeing the girls taking?
Our first class of girls are in their final years of college and university. The first class of girls, we've got a batch that want to be nurses mm-hmm. and a batch that want to be teachers. And then there's a kind of sprinkling of businesswomen in there. Mm-hmm. I will be very anxious to see how they do as they progress on. But they're on track. Things look really good. You know, I was most excited when Monica showed up the other day. I was home in Kenya in March. And Monica walks in the door and says, "Hi, can I do my teaching practice with you?" At Daraja. So we currently have a graduate, and I can only imagine the day that all of our teaching staff are former Daraja graduates.
Oh, that's almost overwhelming to even think of, isn't it? When you think of how nervous and unsure those girls are when they arrive at the gates of Daraja and continue this amazing education. Now, I've had the privilege of seeing the actual campus, and I've seen it with 26 girls. I can only imagine how exciting it is with 114 girls. Tell us about the average day for a girl, because I know it starts early and finishes late.
It does. You know, we have to have this conversation. Girls that get up at 4 a.m. are not allowed to do late study hall. They have to go to bed before 10 o'clock. But our girls are getting up 5 a.m. That's kind of an average, 5 a.m. They get up, they get dressed, they do their chores. They're in the classroom by 6 and studying until breakfast at 7:30. They eat as fast as they can, and they head into classes that go from 8 until 4:30. And then they have kind of this extracurricular activities that happen, sports, music, clubs, those sorts of things. 6 o'clock is dinner, 7 o'clock is study hall all the way until 10. It is constant studying, focusing, because they're trying to, when you talk about the Kenyan curriculum, they take a 12th grade exam that we call the SAT on steroids. And it is 3 weeks long, 4 hours a day, and you are tested on everything you learned over the course of 4 years in 8 different subjects. And whatever you get on that exam depends on what you can do in university and for the rest of your life.
And do you see total dedication from these girls and commitment to these exams and to the mm-hmm. study?
Yes. I think the first couple of years, it feels like it's a long way away for those first, you know, 9th and 10th graders. We call them form 1s and 2s. By the time they're in their third year with us, they start to settle down and buckle down and really focus. And you cannot get a senior, a 12th grader in our program, away from her books her last year. She is ultimately focused.
I'm thinking as you're saying that there's room around our global community for some hard work mm-hmm. and study like this is a real example. And speaking of that, you've set up a unique model in the middle of Kenya. Is it being copied? Are you being watched, looked at, observed mm-hmm. for the success that you've had?
We are not being copied yet, but we are definitely making an impact. We often say that we are small in scale, but significant in impact. Just recently, our top administrators were invited to the Ministry of Education in Kenya to sit as part of a think tank, as part of a mentor. How do you get mentorship into the classroom? And there were 4 high schools represented at that school. Daraja was one, or at that think tank, and Daraja was one of them. And there were 3 others: Starehe Boys, Alliance High, and Strathmore. That are huge, big schools that have been around for a long time. And then you have Little Daraja. because we are making an impact. Our community members know what we're doing. Kenya is very aware of what we're doing, and they're supporting us. For the first year ever, we are holding, last year we held our very first fundraiser. We raised $20,000 in Kenya. Mm-hmm. We're holding two more this year. Kenya is excited to support our program. They understand what we are doing for their daughters. It's awesome.
That is wonderful that you're getting that support, because I was going to ask you about funding. Do you also retain funding from the United States?
We do. You know, 90% of our support comes from private personal donations, people who are as passionate as we are about girls' education. We are incredibly grateful for their support. We're just now have the track record where we really feel that we've got a good, strong, solid case to give for grantors. So we're looking for those grants to help take us to the next level. That's what it's going to take.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm hoping that our listeners are taking particular note of that statement you just made. Now, looking at these girls and this wonderful education that they're getting and how they're able to go on to college, is Kenya going to open her doors to these girls and allow them to come in as leaders in their fields? Can they run hospitals if they followed a nursing course? Can they become judges if they're becoming attorneys now? Is the opportunity there?
You know, it's interesting. I think there's a glass ceiling wherever you go. But Kenya is being very progressive. In 2010, they passed a new constitution that has a requirement that there are a certain number of women representatives in parliament. I think that's pretty darn progressive. You know, there may only be 30% of women that are in the workforce in Kenya currently, but there's an emerging middle class that's going on right now. You are seeing there's a shift happening between everyone used to want to work for the government, and now everyone's saying, I want to start my own business because the economy is improving, roads are improving. Mm-hmm. And I really think that it's really just a matter of time that women will be able to hold some of those high level positions. And they are now, but it's like everywhere, there is a glass ceiling. Mm-hmm. But I have real hope and see the potential for Kenya.
And it sounds as though if they can state and show that they have a Daraja education, that that's actually going to set them pretty high on that path.
Yeah, it better. You know, we also, we prepare our girls for the future. We prepare them with life skills. It's not just a four-year education that we provide. We have a five-month training program that we call the transition program, and they do 2 months in an internship. They learn how to write a business plan. They have these skill sets about community organizing, and we help them get that in addition to getting an ID card and, you know, doing some of those kinds of things, registering for the government systems. But our girls are uniquely suited to, they're empowered, and then they've got the skill sets to go out and be really marketable players.
This must be having an impact on their families too when they go home for the school holidays, as I know you call them in that more British of terms, it's what I'm used to too, that when they go home, they must pass the word of Daraja on around their villages and around their families and their relatives. Is that having an impact, do you think, in a silent way?
You know, it's not silent, actually.
It's
having a really wonderful impact. So the way the girls pay back their education is they are required to do 30 hours of community service every year. So Daraja provides over 3,000 hours of community service each year. And our girls, the purpose of community service is to have the communities see these girls being a part of solution. And then it helps the girl understand that she can be an agent for change. So it's this win-win situation that's happening. We've also seen what we're calling the Daraja effect, is that we took from very far north in northern Kenya, this area called Baragoi. 1 year we took three girls from that area because we really saw the need. There had maybe 20% or less of girls were going on to a secondary school. So we took three girls that year. Those girls went home and did community service during their school breaks. The very next year, 80% of the girls went on to secondary school. That's the Daraja effect, and that's happening in one community. Mm. Can you imagine when we talk about a multiplier effect, when we take our students from across the country, how many communities are being changed by this one small school with significant impact?
Mm-hmm. I love that you keep saying that significant impact, because it certainly is. What is your interview process like? You must receive more applications than you can take girls. Mm-hmm. So what are the steps, and what is that like, having to make decisions?
You know, we receive over 300 applications every year for 30 slots. We narrow that down, we whittle it down to 150 interviews every year. So we base our criteria on three things. We look at the financial need of the family. we look at their eighth grade examination scores, and we look at their potential for leadership. So we take those 150 interviews and we sit down with them. And we have a panel of four, two women, two men, two Mzungu, two Kenyan. And we ask them to introduce themselves. We ask them to tell us their story. And then we ask four questions, the same four questions of every single girl. Why is education important to a Kenyan girl? What's one thing you wish you could change about your community and why? Give us an example of a time you were a leader. And what will you do if you don't get into Daraja? And each of those four questions tells us something about that girl. We know exactly what we're looking for. And sometimes you get really surprised in those interviews. But we travel across the country. We partner with organizations that already identify these girls for us. So we're not reinventing the wheel and sorting through hundreds of thousands of applications. Because in Kenya, the statistics are only 50% of girls progress from eighth grade onto ninth grade. And in the rural areas, that percentage is only 30%. So the need is great. And so there's lots of girls that are out there, but we're trying to identify the girls that will succeed the best in our program. And that's why those four questions are so important to identifying them.
Yeah, yes, they dig deep, those questions. You must mm-hmm. hear a lot of very, very different answers. And then, of course, the answers you're looking mm-hmm. for. You also have girls at the academy who are from very, very disparate religions. How does that work?
You know, we are, and we say we're non-denominational, but we embrace all religious faiths. So we have 2 hours set aside on Sunday that we call spiritual time. The girls have divided themselves up into different groups. You've got the Catholics, you've got the Protestants, you've got the Muslims, right? Just kind of by nature. But what's really fun is once a month, they have a joint religious service together. And so we really embrace those. We have really important values in our school, and one of them is about embracing differences and treating all with dignity and respect. We really embrace different ways of thinking. I think that's what makes our cultures rich and wonderful. If we all thought the same, how boring would that be?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Extremely boring. I must admit that I was privy to one of those beautiful services when I was at Daraja. And when the Muslim girls came into the more evangelical classroom into the service there, I asked them afterwards, why did you join? And they said, they sing, we don't. And it was the joy that they were creating amongst the girls, and all you saw all the barriers fall down. It was a model really for the rest of the world where we have these religious discriminations. So it sounds like this could be a model for the whole of Africa.
Definitely. You know, we have spoken with the education director at the UNESCO office, East Africa, and she said, you guys, have you considered replicating? You are reaching a population of girls that is most often denied access to higher education because they can't get educated, they can't be part of the government solutions and the policy level. And she said, wow, you guys, if you could consider replicating, you might really have something here.
And are you thinking about that, you and Jason?
You know what? I am thinking about that. Those are dreams that I'm almost too afraid to say out loud. I know the first step is tripling to taking our small-scale program and making it a real institution and not just a large family. That's step one. Step two, in my wildest dreams. Yeah.
So we watch this space is what we should be saying here. Is this correct? Because there could be some really golden opportunities coming forward. Now, you're raising a young son, and I've been to your home. What's it like for Thomas and for you and to have him pretty much, I would imagine, as the center of these girls?
You know, it is so fun to have this little boy. So I say we've helped 224 girls gain access to education. And so I say I have 224 daughters and one son. And Thomas loves being on campus. He's passed around. You know, there's six girls that continuously come up every break. Hi, Thomas. Hi, Thomas. Can I hold Thomas? So I can only imagine what it will be like for this little boy to grow up knowing already the importance of girls' education. That will be buried in his psyche. Mm-hmm. And he'll get to watch his parents dedicate their lives to education. And it will be really interesting to see what he does. We have, you know, when you have children, you look at, all the possibilities for them. And I can't wait to see how he turns out.
Well, with parents like Jenny and Jason Doherty, there is absolutely no doubt that this little Thomas will turn out exceptionally well and will have a great education. Jenny Doherty, thank you for joining us this afternoon or today. It doesn't really matter the time of day, because what you've done is bring the Daraja Academy to our listeners and open their ears and I hope their eyes too to the possibilities when somebody is passionate about a cause and follows that passion and starts something as you have. What would you like to say as a final remark?
Oh,
I know there are a million things, and I know I've caught you on the spot.
You know, I think that one thing that I've learned from Dharaja is the power of the individual. We are so much more powerful than we have any idea. I was 26 when we started Dharaja, and I've affected 224 girls' lives, who in turn have infected 224 communities and families. I am one individual. If we all could do that, I really think this world could change.
And on that note, thank you.